Welcome to Nuanced Judaism, coming to you from OU Torah.
I'm Simi.
And I am Rivka.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, Rivka, this one's for you.
Okay.
The intellect and emotions, two aspects of the human person. What do you have to say about that in terms of how you approach God? Which one do you use? Which one don't you use? Which one's emphasized? Which one's diminished?
That is a very broad question. The way I phrase it, and this is after a lot of discussion and a lot of thinking, is like a tree. If my belief in my relationship with God, or my belief in my relationship with acting the religious life in a day-to-day grind, is the trunk, the branches, the fruits, the leaf, the colorful, diverse life of a religious person, then that would be the emotions. Me, I'm a deeply emotional person, and I'm not thinking about the logical reasoning behind every single time I pray. I connect in a relationship-based way, in an emotional way. However, that is not to say that the roots or the seed of the tree is pure emotion. I think that that would make the tree too flimsy. That would, a storm would come, storm of doubt, storm of winds of distraction and indecision would come. And suddenly, if I do some deep soul searching, I realize that it's only emotion that could also be there from a cult or from brainwashing. That's when I grapple and grasp back to where I would call the roots of the tree or the seed of the tree that are not visible and potentially not as big or not as colorful as the tree itself, but is the foundation, or even better than the roots, the seed, the source of it, where the DNA of the tree comes from. So the differentiation here is day to day. I don't live like a calculating scientist, me personally. I know people who do. But I would feel not strong and true to myself if I didn't have the backing of some steady logic. What do you think?
Okay, so just to maybe just focus on the metaphor you used. You use the metaphor of a tree. Mm-hmm. Now the tree, but you also distinguish between the roots and the seed. Roots. Is there meaning, are you adding depth to the metaphor? Meaning, is the seed where it comes from, and that has a certain reason or rationale, even though when almost once that was done, you let it flow on its own.
Exactly. So on the one hand, it's partially either. The seed being the source and where it came from. So the logic or the research that I did gave me, so to speak, the permission to invest myself emotionally. So, for example, you know, people, when I meet students, often this actually happens about students talking about friends of theirs, not themselves. Whether it's themselves or not is to be seen. But a student will come to me and talk about another student, a friend of hers, who's in a not a good place emotionally. Maybe a breakup, maybe lost a job, maybe he's dealing with trauma. And something, after we discuss it, I will recommend or caution this friend is to make sure that this other friend, the friend in a vulnerable position, doesn't get too close to overly charismatic cult leaders or big followings online. Because when you're feeling empty and you're feeling devoid of what makes you you, it's very easy to find a charismatic filler for that void. And that would then be a very emotional push. Your whole drive is, your whole tree is emotions, and it's colorful and it's vibrant, but it doesn't have that seed of logic. It doesn't have the roots of logic, and they're different. The seed being the beginning, thereby the permission to healthily invest your emotions, because you don't invest your emotions into everything.
So, okay, I like this because it's a template. It's a template rather than a specific description.
Correct.
You're not talking about how you do it. You're talking about the template you use to do it.
Yes. What is healthy to do? You don't fall head over heels into a guy or a girl without doing some basic check if we have the same values and if this is even compatible long term. Otherwise, you're building a tree with no roots and you didn't have a seed. You didn't have, so to speak, permission to flow into that. Whereas if you did do that research and you do realize you have similar values, you have similar future plans, then go build your tree. Go let the emotions flourish, bloom.
Okay, so I hear that. So you're saying you've got the template, you've got the tree, you've got the blossoming, but the cool thing about your metaphor of the tree is that you're paralleling it with, if I'm understanding this correctly, you're paralleling it with many other relationships. But I suppose that's part of the key here, that yes, your religious experience is a relationship.
Correct.
So when it comes to a spouse, a girlfriend or a boyfriend, or actually investing yourself in any meaningful relationship,
any culture, anything, the thing that pushes people in the world is emotions. Don't tell me that you're completely rational and everything you do is logic based. I'm not going to buy it. However, our emotions are like this overexcited yappy dog or overexcited monster that we have to keep on a leash. It'll give us that passion and that fire, but we need to decide when to let it loose.
In philosophy, they call it epistemological responsibility, which is epistemology is basically the discovery of like knowledge and how you know things. And you have to be responsible, they say.
What do you mean?
Being responsible for your belief system means you have to be able to justify on some level why you're doing what you're doing. And if you can't justify it, or if you're holding beliefs that aren't, as maybe you would say, have a seed or have a justification in the seed area, thereby you don't have a right to hold them. For example, the example that's given is that if you had a ship that wasn't seaworthy,
okay,
and the owner of the ship wanted the voyage to happen, but he knew it wasn't seaworthy, but he convinced himself it was seaworthy,
right,
and the ship went out to sea and it everybody drowned.
Right, okay.
People would claim even if people hadn't drowned, he would also be guilty.
Wow, because he's relying on
a belief that wasn't justified.
Well, warranted. And in Judaism, you're not allowed to rely on miracles. Even though we believe miracles have happened and we believe miracles are going to happen, me and my life, I can't act based on there's going to be an open miracle for me.
Because it's not justified.
It's not justified. If I live my life relying on open miracles, that's going to have a cost, either financial, mental health, physical health. Living that way always has a cost. And the problem is not that we don't believe in miracles. We do believe in miracles and they come and people experience them and we hope for them. But the problem is that cost is not warranted. That cost is not allowed from the Torah perspective.
So in a way, maybe saying it this way, the idea of relying on a miracle on the foundation of sort of circumventing or not being loyal to the halachic system, which is sort of the basis in which you're relating to God. You're relating to God based off the idea that God communicated with the Torah, in which case to jeopardize that and then still hope for these, like, live one's life in the hope of these miracles, it's sort of like
an upside down tree, the roots being the halacha and the fruits being the beautiful moments of miraculousness.
So interesting.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. So how would you represent it? I mean, this is a very obviously dependent on your personality. So how do you see this?
So the reason it came to mind, the discussion, was because the parasha is Chukas, at least in Eretz Yisrael. Chukas is the classic parasha where people talk about the unknowability of the commandments of the Torah, which I always struggled with.
Like the red heifer and stuff.
Exactly. How, and there's obviously the midrashim that flow around it about its in the inability to understand it completely, which is why I was always attracted to the commentators who do explain it. Not that they say the entire thing stands on the reasons that they provide, but being able to structure it in a framework motivates me to learn about it, but also to do it. It's part of my motivation, meaning it's not, I suppose, as you described, once the permission is given, right, then I can dive into the system.
So for me, I need the reasons or the logical backing for other things in the Torah until for me that's good enough. And then I can take red heifer as an unknowability. For you, you want to have knowability to that as well. Is that correct?
I don't really know how to express it precisely, but I suppose I may have a more skeptical nature.
Yeah.
And thereby, I can't dive into things, meaning I can't immerse myself in a system completely. Hence, each step of the way, I feel the need to understand. And of course, there are times that obviously I don't. And thereby, I have to bear that burden of non-understanding. At times, I have to bear that burden.
But it's a burden for you. For me, it's not so much a burden.
Exactly. Okay, so that's, but should we,
so that's different in personality. I think that's so beautiful that two people with different personalities can look at Judaism and look at their personalities and find a metaphor, find a schema that fits. Anyway, but back to chukas. What did you want to say?
No, just using that as a platform for an interesting conversation. So if I had to summarize your point and then how my idea interjected into it, the point I think you were making is that there's a metaphor of a tree and a seed. The Kuzari, by the way, does a beautiful metaphor of a tree and a seed and the use and the value of the Jewish people. Very much well worth looking at.
Cool.
But the seed is basically the permission. The seed has got but once that is, you sort of pour yourself into the system, mm-hmm. into the relationship. For me, I suppose each stage of it requires, each branch has to have something for me to immerse myself in it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's one's better or worse. I think there's costs to both sides and 100%. Beauty to both sides as well. But yeah, all right, guys, have a wonderful week, a wonderful Chodesh. And
Chodesh Tov.